The Reset Podcast is a show about fresh starts. In business, career, relationships, health, and life in general, sometimes we all go forward to a new square one. Every moment is a new opportunity to begin again, and my guests will tell you how, when, and why they decided to reset their lives. I'm Franklin Taggart. Welcome to the Reset Podcast. Hello, everybody. My name is Franklin Taggart, and this is the Reset Podcast. My guest today is a business coach in Northern Colorado, Carl Dirschau, and I'm excited to get to know a little bit more about Carl today. I've only just met him recently. I've actually been on his mailing list for longer than I've known him. So I'd like to just welcome you, Carl, and say hello to you.
Hey, Franklin. Thanks a bunch. And yeah, it was good to finally meet you in person. You know, just meeting people solely over email is not exactly the same.
Yeah, it's a little bit flat. And it's like now I have a sense of who you are. And that's a good thing. Carl is the owner and operator and founder of a company called Small Fish Business Coaching. And we're going to get to what Small Fish is all about, but we're going to, you know, as this is a show about fresh starts, we're going to go back a few years, and we're going to talk a little bit about something that happened sometime in the 1990s that was kind of a turning point for you that actually ultimately led to kind of a twisting path. And can you tell us a little bit about the before part of that story? Where were you back then, and what happened to facilitate this change in direction?
Well, great. So I had gone to school here in Colorado and graduated and then started working for a large electronics firm. And I worked there basically since I had graduated college. And I started out as an engineer, then got into management, then got into business management, and sort of was doing the normal core sort of management progression. And it culminated in 1995 is when I started a foreign service assignment in Australia. So I was ultimately down there for 2.5 years, which was absolutely fabulous. Learned a bunch, had a lot of fun, great, great people. It was really kind of the high point of my career to that point. And what happened, though, is I started realizing that I was getting more and more stressed out. And it kind of came to a culmination when I woke up at 3 a.m. on a Sunday, and I was sweating about all of the stuff that I had to do that week. And it's like, wow, I can't even get a night's worth of sleep. That maybe I better rethink of what I'm about. And also it collided with the fact that as I returned from that assignment in Australia, I was really sort of rudderless, because I couldn't continue the job that I was doing because I was moving out of the country and giving the job to somebody else. And I didn't have a natural management progression path when I returned here to Colorado. And so then the discussion that I had with my boss is, all right, so what do I want to do? What do I want to become? You know, that you've accomplished all these great things and, you know, gotten a bit of a reputation inside the company and, you know, all good stuff. And so that's when I started this path of figuring out what is it that I wanted to do with the rest of my career. And I worked with a career counselor for just a few sessions. When I look back, it was actually quite quick, but it was absolutely life-changing because I made the decision that I do not want to continue up the executive ranks in the company. That really became clear to me when I looked at the org chart one day, and every boss above me, including the CEO, was divorced. Mm. And I decided that that was not a sacrifice that I was willing to make. I did not want to go, and you know, so if that's the price of being an executive in a large company, then nope, don't want to do it. Got a lot of other skills. Let's go another direction. Why not? So that was kind of the before picture. Mm-hmm. And it sort of took a couple, 3 years to gel. But that's when I found the field of coaching. Mm-hmm. And the way I was describing it at the time was that it was the part of management that I liked. I liked working with people. I liked helping individuals to succeed. I didn't like all the overhead junk of being a manager, but, you know, I mean, the big surprise. And so I found out that there was actually a field that was called coaching, and people did it and they got paid for it. And it's like, well, this is pretty cool. And so I went and ultimately got a coaching certification right after the turn of the millennium, and started thinking in the back of my mind that, well, you know, this is probably now my career plan B, to the extent that a full-time coaching job does not exist in this company, but maybe I can make one. Mm-hmm. And so obviously they're going to want to pay me to do something different in the interim. So I've got to go out and find a job. And so I ended up doing a lot of little journeyman jobs. You know, some of them lasted for 6 months or a couple of years. And, you know, sometimes it was management, sometimes it was facilitation, sometimes it was process design, just all kinds of stuff. But, you know, I had in my mind that now my ultimate goal is to create a full-time coaching job in this company. And then obviously I would be the best person to fill it because I created it. So that was my task for the next decade, is to work on that. And I actually did a couple of times create a job that had coaching as a component of it. Most of the time I had jobs that did not mention the word coaching, but a couple times I did. And there were jobs that I had created. But it turns out that when you create your own job, they're not necessarily long-lived. That's one of the things that I discovered, because, you know, they're kind of unusual. And so the next time you have a boss change, then the new boss comes in and goes, I don't understand what this is. So I don't think we want to do that anymore. And So that happened a couple times. It was cool. But, you know, I did a lot of other things that were similar. And so I did a couple of stints of executive facilitation. Mm-hmm. That's challenging. That's like herding cats for real. So anyway, that sort of took me up through the rest of my career at that company. And then I got laid off in 2009. You know, they said, go away. We don't want to give you free coffee anymore. Take 10,000 of your closest friends that we can't afford to pay. And it's like, all right. And so I called up the corporate head of HR and I said, okay, I've been given my notice. And I'll make you an offer. I have access to 300 people around the globe who have an interest in coaching and are even interested in contributing their time at no cost. And so what I would like to do is I would like to head up coaching and mentoring for the company. So you pay me and then I'll make the rest of it happen. And a little hand wavy, but you know, that's where I was at that time. And her response was, nah, not so much. So it's like, all right, my career here has come to an end and that's okay. So, you know, I lost my job in 2009 and, you know, the recession was starting to happen. We had no idea how big or whatever. So I started sort of a parallel path. I was looking for a job part of the time, and I was starting my own coaching business part of the time. You know, kind of had my fingers in both things. And after about 2 months, I decided, nope, none of the jobs I'm seeing inspire me. But this coaching thing actually does inspire me. I think I could go out and start my own company. So I did start my own company. It wasn't Small Fish. I was focused on large organizations at that point because that's sort of the environment I came from. Went out and got another certification from a company in London. And that was great, but I wasn't really seeing any success. Turns out that selling your services is actually like real work. You know, you put up a website and print some business cards and print a brochure, and then what, you sit back and wait for the phone to ring, and guess what? It doesn't ring. So, so that's when I started looking around at different models. And that's why I ended up joining up with Small Fish, is because they gave me the sales and marketing part of it. You know, it's, even to this day, it's a very strong brand, very memorable. People recognize it, and you know, it's like, oh, you're that fish guy. It's like, you do some what, consulting thingy? And it's like, well, we call it business coaching, and this is why we call it coaching. But you know, and it's Small Fish. You know, it's not big fish, but. And you know, it makes for a great discussion. It's wonderful. And so I've learned a lot about the sales and marketing part of the process, and that's when I started getting clients. And so I've been building up my business ever since.
I'd like to take the conversation back when you were in Australia and you had the realization that that high point had been reached, and you weren't interested in going any higher. Tell me a little bit about what were the realizations that you had when you consulted with the career counselor?
Well, so he asked some questions that I'd never been asked before. Things like, so who are you? Okay. I mean, not like what can you do? What are your skills? What do you get rewarded for? But like, who are you deeper inside? And so we went through a very simple exercise to talk about my personal values. And we also talked about what kind of environments do I really thrive in? Where does, you know, I get excited to wake up in the morning and say, yay, I get to go into work because I get to do X, right? And so that was some of the exercises that he helped me with. And it was a real realization, because you typically go through a corporate career learning how to do things. So you acquire skills, you acquire networks and things like that. Although I didn't have the language for it at the time, right? You know, it was just sort of like, well, I have a lot of people I've worked with. You mean that's an actual thing that I need to nurture and make more powerful? It's like, yeah, that's a good thing, because that's your influence over how, not only how well you do your job, but what kind of jobs you might have in the future. The other thing is that he totally looked at it as a self-directed exercise. And that's a real shock to most people. Actually, I wrote a whole series of blog articles about how do you define your own job in a large company. Because I went through that progression twice, and partially there was a third time. And, you know, so the idea that you can actually go the direction you want to go is very foreign, because it's like, no, wait a minute. Don't you like wait for jobs to open up and then take them, you know, apply for them? Or, you know, your boss gives you a promotion because you're really good at what you want to do, what you're doing now. And so they say, well, you'd make a good supervisor, so let's promote you. You know, and that's normally the way people think about career jobs. And so it was a totally different way of thinking about it. And it's sort of like as if you were a independent consultant kind of person, yeah, but that wasn't the language I was using at the time, because I was, you know, still using the language of being inside a company. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when I look back on it these days, I can see, yeah, I was developing my portfolio. I was developing my network. I was prioritizing things that I could do possibly might be interested in? Would they pay me to do it? What does my skill set qualify me to do elsewhere? Different kinds of jobs, things like that. So that was kind of the process he took me through. And I think it was like just three sessions or something like that. It was not much, but damn, it was life changing.
Yeah, really a lot of clarification happened in that time. That's the best of times as far as any kind of coaching or consulting is concerned. It's like,
yeah,
to have that kind of a realization in that turnaround is really, it says a lot about his skills and his capabilities. But I'm also, I'm curious, your foray into coaching was very gradual. And I'm kind of interested to learn a little bit about what were the important steps that you took along the way to ultimately end up full-time in coaching?
Well, I guess the biggest one is that over the span of a couple of years, I came to the decision to say, yes, this is where I want to go. All right. And I was calling it at the time Career Plan B because there was always that fear of jumping out into the great unknown and could you survive as your own business? And that holds a lot of people back. And of course, you know, when you're the sole breadwinner for the family, that also has that golden handcuffs kind of effect too. It's like if you just take the big leap and say, okay, I'm going to start a business and go out and, you know, you might just like totally fail. How are you going to put food on the table? Are you going to lose your house? Are you going to, you know, is your wife going to divorce you? I mean, all of these fears come out of the woodwork. And so one of the big choices was to say, but despite all that, this is the direction I want to go. I think I have a shot at doing it inside the company. So let me give that a try first, because if I could do it, then I could have both job security and work in coaching, and that would be like super ideal. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the major things. Another thing is that I started to actually do it. So I defined a job where I had coaching as a part-time component of what I was doing. The other component was mostly process design kind of stuff. But the boss was just fabulous. She sponsored me in this job and said, yes, I'll give you the freedom to do it. And so I was coaching each of the members of her team in addition to this. And a lot of what I learned is I didn't know what the hell I was doing. So that's when I decided, okay, I'm going to get serious about this. I'm going to go get a certification. So I looked up for something that was in the field that, because there's a lot of specializations to coaching. So I wanted something that was around organizational coaching. And so I went out and got that. My boss basically paid for that because they had budget for education, right? And she's like, well, you know, this helps you in your job and makes you a happier employer too. So why not? Let's go for it. So that was a part of it. I also started attending coaching conferences once a year.
Okay.
So I lucked out that I could attend. I think the first one I attended was in Chicago or something. And I decided I got to do this. This is going to be great. Fabulous. And so I went and talked to my boss and I said, how about if I'll pay the travel expenses and you pay the conference fee? And she's like, fine. Okay. Let's give it a shot. See how it works. That one agreement ended up being leveraged for the following six conferences every year where I went back to my then boss and said, you know, my previous boss let me do this. And the only time it backfired was the time that I went to Melbourne, Australia for the conference there, because then the travel expenses really cost me something. I wasn't just doing it on frequent flyer miles, you know. Yeah. And so But for me, it was totally worth it to be able to go back to Melbourne in 2007 and visit all my friends there and stuff like that. And so we had a great time.
Was this the period of time where you discovered the International Coach Federation?
Yeah, I actually joined ICF. That ICF was the first conference that I attended, 2001, I guess it was, summer of 2001, because it was before 9/11. So, I connected up with ICF, and, you know, it's a great professional organization, but it stresses to you that you need to be serious about this. You need to really develop and hone your skills, get lots and lots of practice, go to and, you know, attend classes and, you know, whether they're structured or one-off or webinars or whatever they might be. So I've been continuing to do a lot of that development. And that's sort of led me, last couple of years, I was on the board of the local ICF chapter in Denver. But that was something I found very, because it, you know, this is my tribe. These are people who get it. This is, they understand why it's so cool, right?
Was joining ICF something that contributed to your belief that full-time coaching was a possibility for you as, you know, on your own rather than in the larger organization?
Yeah, and, you know, that it's so inspiring to see people who are actually doing what you want to do and are doing it sustainably, okay? And so, yeah, super inspiring, because it's something else to, you know, you get those webinar notices of, oh, you can become a seven-figure coach in a year because I've got all the keys and I'll show you how to do it. And it's very hype-based. So you don't, it looks like maybe they're making more money on selling webinars than they are on actually doing coaching.
Yeah.
And so it's really inspiring to talk to people one-on-one, and they're like, yeah, you know, this is what I'm doing, and this is what I struggle with, and what's a challenge, but, you know, yes, I'm making real income, and people are actually paying for this.
Yeah.
I did end up moving slightly. When I had been thinking about organizational coaching, and when I joined Small Fish, that's when I moved into small business coaching. And a lot of it was that back in the recession that large companies just weren't hiring this kind of thing and weren't spending money on it. And so that, and I also find out that small businesses are a lot more fun, lot less hierarchy and BS. So,
yeah, the folks that you work with in the small businesses tend to be a little bit more invested personally.
Yeah, and you can talk to the owner of the company who is the key point of leverage for the entire business's success. You know, you're not working with somebody that's like 15 layers down inside some large company.
So you got to 2009 and your security blanket was pulled out from under you.
Yep.
And you jumped right back in and said, okay, this is it. I'm going to go ahead and do the coaching full time. Went into the organizational direction first. Is that accurate?
It didn't really work, partially because people weren't buying it, partly because I didn't know anything about marketing. All of my experience had been sort of over on the R&D side. And, I sometimes had marketing people working for me, but my level of personal understanding and buy into that wasn't really high. So, you know, a lot of that was my fault. But, you know, at that point in the recession, large companies just, they're like, I don't understand it, and I'm not going to spend money on it. Go away.
Yeah. Well, what were the hardest lessons to learn as you branched out on your own? And how did you get through those lessons?
Well, one of the things a lot of people struggle with is the self-management. Because when you don't have a boss beating you up every day to say, here's what you need to do, and, you know, progress reports and all this kind of junk, it's like, it's real easy to just sit back and say, well, you know, I'm doing market research on Facebook. And then, you know, 3 hours disappears and you haven't really accomplished anything. So a lot of the self-discipline. Now, I had been a little bit more fortunate than some that I had worked from home for several years, actually. And so that kind of gave me some of the skills. You know, how do you keep yourself on track? Mm-hmm. But I know that, you know, it's a bigger challenge for people to be thrown into this. You get to make up whatever you want to do. And you get to decide whether it was smart or not. You get to decide whether it was a good investment of time. And so, you know, when I work with people who are just starting off one-person businesses, that's part of what I discuss with them, you know, is that you've got to have half your brain that thinks as the business owner, and you got to have the other half of your brain that thinks as the employee, and you have conversations between the two. You know, the boss is beating you up and saying, you know, I'm really kind of getting worried that we have no income coming in this month. You know, if we have no income coming in for too much longer, I'm not going to be able to afford you, the employee, and so I'm going to lay you off, and you're going to have to go out and get a job. That's kind of a weird way of doing it, but it's also a little bit more fun than just bashing your head against tasks and lists and stuff like that. Because, you know, if you are convinced you need to do it, then you'll use whatever tools make sense for you. You know, if it's a bunch of stickies on the side of your computer monitor, if it's a, you know, vision statement up on the wall, if it's, you know, keeping a list of here's what I did today and checking things off, you know, whatever works for you is fine. But the reason people don't stick with it is that they're not really dedicated to needing to do it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's similar to what people struggle with, like weight loss and dieting and stuff like that. You know, it's being accountable to yourself, but in a positive way, not just beating yourself up all the time.
Right. A little bit curious, what's the most important thing that you've learned about marketing? You said that was one of the things that you didn't know a lot about. What's the most important thing that you've gained in terms of your education in marketing?
That's a good question. One is that, especially in my kind of business, relationships are everything. Okay. And so to be able to be out there actually meeting people face to face. Now, I'm pretty active on LinkedIn and on my blog and stuff like that, but it's a different kind of relationship that isn't so deep. I mean, you know, you and I met for the first time in person, what, last week or the week before, something like that?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. And, you know, all of a sudden, we had a different kind of conversation than if we're just blasting emails at each other to say, hey, here's my newsletter. Oh, here's my newsletter. You know, it's not really developing that much relationship.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. The other thing that I guess was kind of surprising to me is that for this kind of service, it takes people a long time to make decisions. And so you have to keep the relationship going over the long term and not just keep changing it every week or anything like that. You got to keep on message for an awful long time. I had a great example. A guy has a local business here in town, and he called me up one day and he says, I've been following your newsletter for a year now, and I finally decided that I might need a coach. So can we talk?
Yeah.
And so I ended up working with him for like 6 months. It was great. I had no idea that he was watching what I was doing. You know, there was just the right thing occurred in his mind. There was nothing I did to spark it at all. Yeah. You know, it was the circumstance that he was in with his business at the time where he was worried about putting in some new management in his business. And he realized, maybe I'd better talk to somebody about that. And that's happened a number of times now. And so that's why I've been doing my newsletter since 2010. Mm-hmm. I've been doing that values-based biz blog since 2013. And it really hasn't changed much. I've refined my messages a bit. So what I'm focusing on now is on companies that are driven by a sense of mission and purpose to improve society, to improve the planet, whatever. But really, that's just a refinement of the messaging that I've had since I started. So it's not changing the value promise of what Small Fish is or anything like that. You know, it's and, you know, I've gone through phases where I've had a particular theme for a little while, or there's something going on in society or in the business community that I want to talk about for, you know, more than just 1 week, you know, things like that. But I'm not going to be doing a 180 yeah. in my business, because then that's basically a reboot of everything that I'm doing. And, you know, if that's necessary, that's fine. You know, rebooting is great, but you want to use that tool judiciously. Yes. Because you're basically starting your marketing over from scratch.
Getting to the, when does a business know that they're ready to call you, and then how do they get in touch with you?
Well, they usually the clients are dealing with some issue of change or big challenge. So, you know, changes can be things like, you know, something's happened in the market and things aren't working the way they used to, so I need to rethink my marketing approach. I've grown large enough that I need to put in a layer of management, or I need to open a second store, things like that. So there's events like that. And that often precipitates things. And in my outreach, I'll talk about each of those things, but I also talk about the things like, okay, so you're starting off a business entirely from scratch and you're sitting there going, oh my God, I don't know where to start, you know, and sometimes that's a fruitful way of getting clients as well. But they, you know, connect in all kinds of ways. It's just like really random, you know, it might be a chamber event. It might be somebody sending me an email in response to message that I had sent out. You know, it might be all kinds of things. And so that's, you know, one of the other key lessons is to have the marketing portfolio or the marketing array of tools. Mm-hmm. When I joined Small Fish, they said, at any time you should have like a dozen things going in marketing. It's like, oh my God, a dozen. I can't even think of a dozen. What do you mean? You know, it's like, and they're like, calm down. All right. We developed in the span of 15 minutes a list of 100 things that are marketing.
Yeah.
And then it became a lot less scary. It's like, oh, you know, so there's passive marketing. I have my logo on the back of my car.
Yeah.
And it's like, people notice that. Oh my God, really? Yes, people notice that. It changes the way you drive, by the way. So yeah, you have to be careful about that. You know, I write for the local business paper, BizWest, and people notice that. I get people commenting about all the time. I've got my blogs. I've got my newsletter. I've got speaking. I go out and do workshops and webinars. I've got a webinar that I just launched a few weeks ago, as a matter of fact, that's targeted specifically at people who want to use their mission to become the basis for their marketing platform. So I can send you the pointer to that if you want to include that in the notes, Franklin.
Yeah, definitely. We'll want to put that in the description, but let's go ahead and let's mention right now, first of all, your website. Tell us how to reach you on the website.
Yeah, so the website's very simple. It's smallfish.us. And if you follow links, you'll find that it's actually connected with smallfish.com.au, which is the Australian half of this company. Mm-hmm. I'm the only one in the U.S., so I get to be the sole presence on the U.S. site. So that's the website. Then, of course, I have my LinkedIn presence. Mm-hmm. with such a unique name, of course, people can find me all over, right? I'm on Facebook as well and Twitter and all that. Mm-hmm. I have the primary blog that I'm using right now is valuesbased.biz. And so that's where the bulk of my outward messaging resides. And like I said, I've been doing that weekly since 2013. So got a lot of content on there, and I actually leverage that into my social media and stuff. So,
well, if a person wants to find the webinars, is the website the best portal for that?
Yeah. So it's simply smallfish.us/webinar.
Okay.
Okay. And basically what it's for is people who are trying to link their marketing into the mission of their business in such a way that that attracts the right kinds of customers and clients to what you're doing. Because I find that attraction is far, far more powerful than going out and just declaring, I have the best product in the world. It's fabulous. Nobody else has a product like it. Well, it may even be true, but it's what everybody is saying. It is not distinct. And so somebody tries your product and they're like, yeah, it was a product. It's okay, whatever. They're not particularly loyal to it unless it really is stunning.
Yeah.
But, you know, most of us are doing things that have a fair number of competitors in a way. And what really makes you stand out is this sense of mission of this is who my company is. You know, this is where our heart is. And I, you know, I might say, Franklin, that you doing this podcast is a strong statement about who you are as a company, mm-hmm. right? And whether people want to connect with you. And, you know, so this is a part of what we're talking about.
Very good. You know, that last bit of wisdom that you shared about the mission, I think, might be a good place for us to finish our conversation today. I was going to just say, is there one piece of wisdom as a one small business owner to the other that you would share? But when you said that bit about mission, being this is us and yeah. this is what we do, and why we do it, I think that's
well, and you know, that's what gets you out of bed every day, right? Yeah. You know, because this is hard work, you know, and it's depressing sometimes. You got to keep the faith. Okay, what gets you out is to say, but I'm doing something that's important to me. Okay, and that's, you know, that's the mission, right? And this is what we're about. Yeah. And with a one-person company, it's easier to do than if you have 100, but, you know, still, it's the same kind of philosophy.
So again, you all can reach Carl at smallfish.us and the values-based biz blog. Is at valuesbasedbiz.com. Is that correct?
No, valuesbased.biz.
Oh, valuesbased.biz. All right. Thank you. And I'll make sure that these links, the correct links, are included in the description.
There we go.
Carl, this has been a wonderful conversation, and I really appreciate your story a lot. And I believe that this is going to be a big encouragement to folks who are getting closer to making the dive into their own small business story.
So
thank you for sharing this morning. To the rest of you folks, I would encourage you, if you have enjoyed this conversation, to investigate Carl's work a little bit more closely and sign up for the webinar or visit the blog or a combination of the two. And Carl, we will see you around town. The rest of you, stay in touch and keep subscribing to the Reset Podcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks for taking the time to listen to, subscribe, and review the Reset Podcast. The Reset Podcast features interviews, insights, and in-depth reflections that will help you navigate your own fresh start. If you'd like to be a guest or share an idea for a topic you'd like to hear about, please contact podcast@franklintaggart.com. I offer a wide range of services to people who are ready to live with clear direction, new possibilities, greater freedom, and unlimited creativity. If you're looking for a new beginning, I'm available to help you. More information is available at franklintaggart.com. The Reset Podcast is a production of Franklin Taggart and Make Your Own Way Media. All rights reserved.